It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Another thing is they try to dig into your medical background to try to find out if you've ever had any kind of previous problems, and they try to blame everything that they can on previous medical conditions, whether it's accurate or not. And they tend to want to make medical decisions, even though they're not doctors. They tell you things. I'm always amazed at what some of these insurance adjusters will say. And my question to them frequently is, where did you go to medical school? Because, you know, obviously they didn't.
Private attorney Wayne O'Brien continues to reveal the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim in the second half of a two-part interview. And we'll talk about how educational testing might worsen, rather than improve, the high school dropout rate during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 51, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A bipartisan group of federal legislators is pressing the Treasury Department to close a loophole that has allowed banks to seize Social Security and disability benefits from customers' accounts, despite federal law intended to protect these benefits from creditors. The loophole also has enabled some banks to seize from customers their recent $250 economic recovery payments, payments to disabled veterans, and supplemental benefits to impoverished individuals from the Social Security Administration. Federal law says creditors can't take Social Security and veterans' benefits to pay a debt, but does not say how money deposited directly into bank accounts is to be protected. This gap has given banks the ability to seize the funds and to collect fees, including garnishment and overdraft fees and other charges, all from otherwise exempt benefits. The Treasury and Social Security Administration, along with banking regulators, developed proposed regulations early this year that closed the loophole. But the regulations have yet to be finalized. In other news, last month Congress passed and President Obama signed the Helping Families Save Their Homes Act of 2009. It includes a measure to reauthorize the housing and shelter programs of the McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act, and makes a number of important improvements to homeless programs. It authorizes $2.2 billion for these programs, up from $1.7 billion in fiscal year 2009. It amends the Emergency Shelter Grant Program to allow nonprofits to provide a broader range of services, including rental assistance, utility payments, housing relocation and stabilization services, and other services to keep people in housing or to move them quickly back into housing. Families living doubled up would now be eligible to receive services. It also expands the definition of homelessness to include people who have a long-term history of housing instability, who can be expected to continue to experience instability, and who are facing eviction within 14 days. Lastly, it requires the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness to develop a national plan to end homelessness and also to work to eliminate laws and policies that criminalize homelessness. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is grounds of defense. A grounds of defense is a written statement giving details of a defense to a lawsuit filed in general district court. It's a more complete explanation of why the person defending the lawsuit, called the defendant, doesn't owe the money or property being requested. If the judge orders a defendant to file a grounds of defense, the defendant will have a later trial date and time. The defendant also will have a date by which to file the grounds of defense. If the defendant does not file by this date, the defendant may automatically lose. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and grounds of defense is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for our weekly question and answer session. We are here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Mariana from Richmond, Virginia, and I think about the case today. It's not doing a great job. Sometimes it should be changed a little bit, the system.
So your question is about education law and what we're doing to be sure kids get a better education?
A better education, better discipline.
Okay, let me try to answer the education portion of that. We have compulsory education, and everybody between the age of basically 5 and 18 is required to go to school, whether it's public school or private school or some type of approved homeschooling program. Despite this, it's really shocking that only 81% of students who graduated in the class of 2008 graduated on time with a diploma. You would think the figure would be closer to, 90, 95, 99%, since everybody has to be in school. But nevertheless, that doesn't happen. Now, there have been a number of things to try to improve education. The main thing on the federal level has been something called the No Child Left Behind Act. And on the state level, the main thing has been the Virginia Standards of Learning, or the SOLs. And those are very controversial because although they do measure students' progress in meeting certain standards of what they should be expected to know by a certain age, those tests have problems because the teachers tend to teach toward the test rather than teaching students what they really might need to learn in order to get a job or to get into higher education or whatever else there is. The other thing that those tests do is they tend to push kids out of the system rather than keep them in the system. The No Child Left Behind Act requires that students make certain progress, and the standards of learning are used to measure that progress. And when the poorer performing students drop out of the system, the statistics actually improve. Even with the poorer students dropping out of the students, a lot of schools don't get accredited, but it's a lot easier to get accredited if your poorer students are dropping out. And that just seems to be what's happening. As I said before, 81% of students graduate on time with a diploma.
I guess you're asking my question right there because the way you see they have 80% graduating, I believe you should have 95% or 98%. But, most of the time the parents had to do something with it because the education is starting from the house.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. And the schools can't do it all. They certainly need the help and cooperation of the parents as well. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate your question.
Turn me around.
In 1977, Wayne O'Brien was elected to the House of Delegates, where he served 4 years on the Courts of Justice Committee. He saw firsthand how our legislative system works and, more importantly, how it does not. He was able to see the influence of big insurance companies and that the rights of the average person were not being protected. Since 1981, Wayne O'Brien has handled personal injury cases and has authored a booklet about the hidden inside secrets big insurance companies don't want you to know about your personal injury claim. Last week, Wayne revealed some of those secrets. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now resumes that interview. What are some of the arguments that insurance companies use to justify a low payment or to even deny a personal injury claim to someone who has been injured?
Innumerable reasons, but a few of them are, number one, if it happens to be a low-impact collision, the insurance companies take the position that if there's not severe damage to the vehicle, then there couldn't possibly be any kind of an injury. The reality, if for anybody who studied physics, knows that a car moving at 35 miles an hour is a terrific amount of force being delivered to a vehicle that transfers that force to the person sitting in the vehicle, and it can do damage. Not always. I've seen cases where people have been in vehicles that were total losses, I mean just absolutely smashed to smithereens, and walk away uninjured. And on the other hand, I've seen people who were in impacts where you could hardly see the damage to the vehicle and had rather severe injuries. So they just use a flat rule. If they can't see a severe impact on the photos of the vehicles, they use that against you. Another thing is they try to dig into your medical background to try to find out if you've ever had any kind of previous problems, and they try to blame everything that they can on previous medical conditions, whether it's accurate or not. And they tend to want to make medical decisions, even though they're not doctors. They tell you things. I'm always amazed at what some of these insurance adjusters will say. And my question to them frequently is, where did you go to medical school? Because, you know, obviously they didn't.
What about not wearing your seatbelt? Is that ever used against injured people?
In Virginia, you're not allowed to use that against injured people. I was a member of the General Assembly when that law passed, and one of the things that was put into the law and still is there is that the wearing or not wearing of a seatbelt would not be usable in a civil action involving an automobile accident case.
Well, that's another good segue to the next question that I had in mind, which is in the insurance code in Virginia, there's a section of the code, I'm sure you're familiar with it, 38.2-510, Unfair Claim Settlement Practices. And it's a list of about 17 practices that are considered unfair claim settlement practices, including not attempting in good faith to make prompt, fair, and equitable settlements of claims in which liability has become reasonably clear. Aren't these tactics that are used by insurance companies violating this law? And if so, how does this law get enforced?
Well, that law is about as toothless a law as you're going to find anywhere. There are many states, California among them, that have strong, what's called bad faith statutes, which basically hold insurance companies' feet to the fire. The Virginia statute, Virginia is probably the weakest state in the nation when it comes to insurance laws. The insurance lobby here is very, very strong, and anything we get is totally watered down.
Well, let's talk then about attorneys. Do you really need an attorney to handle your personal injury claim?
Well, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. I mean, it depends on the degree of injury, and if you're very slightly injured, you might be able to settle your case. It might be to your advantage to settle your case if you're not very badly injured and you're not having any difficulties. But if you've got anything that you're unsure of, if you're still going to the doctor, if you've got severe impact, you probably need a lawyer. Again, the insurance company is not going to deal with you in a serious manner generally. And the reason they're not going to deal with you seriously is because they know that there's nothing you can do to hurt them. And a lawyer, on the other hand, can hurt them by filing suit. They don't like to have suit filed against them. I mean, it happens all the time, of course, but they want to settle as many cases as they can because, again, insurance companies are in the business of maximizing profits. So they don't want to pay lawyers to defend these cases either. And what they do is they pay as little as they can possibly get away with to the lawyers who defend their cases.
Well, now, Wayne, is there evidence that insurance companies actually pay higher settlements to people who hire an attorney rather than to those who don't hire an attorney?
Yes, there is. Actually, the American Institute of Insurers, I believe it's called, which is the insurance company's industry group, did a survey one time and found that injured people with lawyers generally received about six times as much as people who were not represented by lawyers.
Well, how should an injured party go about finding the right lawyer?
There are lots of ways to do it, obviously. Some of them are better than others. You can talk to your friends, family, and friends of people who know lawyers who have been handling these kinds of cases. You can go on the internet and look at lawyers. Just generally, word of mouth is probably as good a way as any, really. And there's some people, one of the things that you want to always look for is somebody who does this kind of work exclusively. There are many lawyers who are in general practice, which means that they do everything. If they're busy doing real estate work and bankruptcy, the likelihood is that they're not going to be as focused on personal injury as they might need to be. So I made a decision about almost 30 years ago that I was going to do this kind of work exclusively, and I think it makes a difference.
Well, now, you mentioned that some lawyers devote themselves exclusively to personal injury work. Others make it just a part of their practice. Regardless, aren't all lawyers personally involved in the personal injury cases they handle?
No, unfortunately, they're not. We have a number of large law firms in Virginia and in Richmond, for that matter, and all across the United States, who are what we call factory-type law firms, where they handle huge numbers of cases, and they handle them by using non-lawyer personnel to handle the cases. So in many of these law firms, you might not ever see a lawyer, or you might see a lawyer once or twice.
Well, if you're an injured party, what should you expect from any lawyer before you even make an appointment for a free consultation?
Well, I think you ought to be able to get information from the lawyer and have questions answered by the lawyer over the phone. I mean, I do that all the time, talk to people on the phone. I send out information. I have a book that I've written called Hidden Inside Secrets, Big Insurance Companies Don't Want You to Know About Your Injury Claim, which I send out to people free of charge who call in.
Okay. If a lawyer refers you to a doctor, is that a good idea?
No, it's not. And generally, most lawyers don't refer people to doctors because people need to find their own doctors. And you don't want to get in a situation where there's some sort of indication of referral for the benefit of the parties involved. So we always try to get our clients to choose their own doctor.
Are frivolous personal injury lawsuits filed? And if so, in your experience, how often does this happen and how do you spot them?
You know, frivolous lawsuits is a term that's thrown around a lot by the insurance industry, and they talk about the civil justice system being clogged with these kinds of cases. The reality is that personal injury suits probably constitute less than 5% of all the cases that are filed. Most of the cases that are being filed by these large corporations and insurance companies for their own benefit.
Okay, tell us, Wayne, then, what does a good personal injury lawyer do for an injured person in a case?
What you do is number one, you deal with the insurance company, you deal with the adjuster. The adjuster knows when he talks to an experienced personal injury lawyer that he or she cannot get away with the stuff that they get away with a layperson. They know that they'd be laughed out of the courtroom. The lawyer gathers all the information that is needed. The lawyer talks to the injured client and tells them and instructs them on how to conduct themselves, how not to talk to other parties, how not to sign documents and so forth. We work with them during the period when they're still treating. Once they're finished treating, then we gather all the medical information, including the bills, the medical records, hospital records, information on loss of earnings, things of that sort, and we pull it together into a package which we submit to the insurance company, and we negotiate with the insurance company to try to settle the case. If we're able to settle the case, we do. If we're not able to settle the case, then suit has to be filed.
And could you describe the legal process if a personal injury lawsuit has to be filed?
The first thing that's done is you have to file a bill of complaint, and that's filed against the driver of the other vehicle. And then at that point, the other driver has 21 days in which to file his answer. That will be generally be filed by a lawyer who is hired by the insurance company. The insurance company's contract with its own policyholder is that it will provide a defense. So the defense lawyer for the other party is provided by their insurance company. And once that happens, then the case would go into what's called the discovery phase, in which interrogatories would be sent between the parties to gather information. And after the information is gathered, then there would be what are called depositions taken, which is live testimony of various parties, usually all the parties to the accident. It's taken before a notary public who transcribes everything, and it's under oath. And then once that happens, then we proceed on to try to get a trial date, and we get a trial date. In recent years, there's been a lot more cases that are settled in mediation generally after the discovery phase is through. And mediation is a situation where you have usually a retired judge come in and mediate between the insurance company and the injured party to see if they can come to some conclusion. And generally, cases are able to settle when they get to that stage because both sides have more information available to them because they have gone through discovery. They found out answers to things under oath. And so generally, a lot of cases settle at that point. Really, even when cases are filed and set for trial, not that many cases in Virginia actually go to a jury trial anymore. Used to be a lot more than it is now.
And if a case does go to a jury, are juries in Virginia generous to personal injury victims?
It varies by area. Some areas of the state, the juries are more generous than others. Northern Virginia generally is many of the counties up there are not that generous there for some reason. And areas down in Virginia Beach and that area are not either. The Richmond area is better than most areas.
And finally, we're just about out of time, but you mentioned a booklet that you've written, Hidden Inside Secrets Big Insurance Companies Don't Want You to Know About Your Injury Claim. How would anyone listening to this show get a copy of that booklet?
Well, there's several ways. You can go to my website, accidentinjurybook.com, or you can call 1-800-368-6495 and extension 4115 and leave your name and address and we will send you a copy.
Thank you, Wayne. We have been talking with Wayne O'Brien. He is a personal injury lawyer here in Richmond and has devoted himself to representing injured persons for more than 30 years in Virginia. Thank you so much, Wayne, for being on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about homestead deeds. The first tip is that a homestead deed is a legal paper filed with your circuit court clerk's office to protect property from your creditors. You don't have to own a home to file a homestead deed. The second tip is that during your lifetime, each adult household member can claim homestead exemptions up to $5,000 plus an additional $500 for each dependent living with you. You can claim the entire exemption in your first deed, or you can claim less and save some of the exemption for later. The third tip is that once you claim the exemption, you can't switch it to cover other property. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips about homestead deeds.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Confused about bankruptcy law? You're not alone. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, bankruptcy attorney Jason Crumbine, explains recent changes to the law and how they affect people who find themselves in financial trouble in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard July 2, 2008. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegquist.